Welcome to Start Local, where we talk with business owners, leaders of nonprofits, and other members of our community focused on doing business in and around Chester County, Pennsylvania. Each episode will provide insight into the local business scene and tell you about opportunities to connect with and support businesses and nonprofits in your local area. The Southern Chester County Chamber of Commerce promotes trade, commerce, industry, and sustainable economic development while supporting a diverse and growing marketplace. The Chamber is proud to partner with the Start Local podcast to raise the profile of businesses and nonprofits throughout Chester County. Learn more about the Chamber at sccc.com. Welcome to Start Local, where we connect with local leaders to support local businesses and nonprofits in and around Chester County, Pennsylvania. I'm Liam Dempsey, and I'm in our podcast studio today with my co-host, Eric Goodmanson. Eric, always a pleasure. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Ready to welcome spring. How are you doing, Liam?
Fantastic. Yes, spring has sprung, and I like that very much. Thank you. Winter's a fine friend, but let's greet spring and welcome. Welcome spring in. Folks, if you like the shows that we've been producing here on Start Local, we invite you to engage with us over on LinkedIn.
That's right. We're pretty active on most social media platforms, but we spend more time on LinkedIn. So go ahead and search for the Start Local podcast on LinkedIn, then follow us to get more of our content and take part in our conversations there. It's a little more interactive than simply subscribing to a podcast on your favorite podcast platform, although we welcome you to do that too.
Yes, yes, we do. Subscribe. Anyway, folks, focusing on today's conversation, we are joined by Christine Zaccarelli, the Chief Executive Officer of the Crime Victim Center of Chester County. Founded more than 50 years ago, the CVC, as it's known colloquially, is the designated provider of services to victims of sexual violence for Chester County. In addition to its work with victims of sexual violence, the CVC also serves victims of all types of crime. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you. Thank you all for having me. There's been so many amazing guests on the show. I'm really honored to finally be one of them.
Well, in the interest of transparency, I will share that, you know this, Chris, that I am a volunteer with the CVC, supporting the organization with its communications for a little over a year now.
Yes, and given how many of our previous guests have mentioned their respect and admiration for Chris and her colleagues at the CVC, we know that we wanted to have you on the show. Hi, Chris. Nice to see you today.
Hey, Eric. Nice to see you, too.
Welcome to the Start Local podcast.
Thank you.
Chris, we've heard you speak very passionately about trauma-informed counseling. Can you walk us through what you mean by that? What is trauma-informed counseling, and why is that an important aspect of your work?
Sure. Being trauma-informed, as it's very popularly known right now. I think it's a real buzzword to hear that trauma-informed. And it goes so far beyond just our work at CVC. Obviously, the folks that we deal with at CVC have clearly gone through trauma. That's why they're coming to us most of the time, on our direct services side at least, because they have gone through some sort of crime, and they want assistance in either getting through the criminal justice system, or they want the counseling to help them heal from the victimization. And so the trauma-informed piece of that goes out into the world, and that's why I'm so passionate about it. I was an attorney at Legal Aid of Southeastern PA before coming to CVC as their CEO, and I really wish that I would have known this information when I was practicing law at Legal Aid, because very similarly to our clients here at CVC, the majority of our clients at Legal Aid, particularly the ones I dealt with, I did a lot of family law. And when you're talking about your kids, there's really very few topics that are as concerning and as stressful as that, as custody cases. And so honing my skills and being trauma-informed as an attorney, I feel would have much better served my clients when I was at Legal Aid. And so that's why I'm really passionate about talking to pretty much anybody who will listen about being trauma-informed and how we can improve all of our systems.
Chris, you and your CVC colleagues provide free support services to victims of crime across Chester County, and particularly to victims of sexual violence. We understand that you received some funding from government at a few different levels, as well as donations from the public. Would you please explain your funding model?
Sure. So we have a pretty unique funding model in that a lot of the services that we provide are statutorily required to be provided. So they're victim rights notifications and things along those lines. So we receive about 80% of our funding from both state and federal sources. Federal is the VOCA, the Victims of Crime Act. We also have a lot of acronyms at CVC, including our name. And then we also receive funding through PCAR, which is the Pennsylvania Coalition to Advance Respect. Those are primarily state funds, but they're also federal funds. And then the VOCA funds come through PCCD, the Pennsylvania Commission on Crime and Delinquency. So we receive about 80% roughly of our funding, but none of our services are 100% funded through our state grants. So we rely very heavily on our local foundations here in Chester County, as well as the events that we hold, and of course, the individual donors who help us do what we do every day.
Chris, before we hopped on today, we were talking about the three core services that the CVC provides: direct services, counseling, and prevention education. Can you briefly explain each of those services to us?
Sure. So a lot of people, when you say direct services, that word's really generally broadly used in the nonprofit world to mean kind of the frontline stuff. But for us at CVC, that has a specific meaning. So our direct services are our victim advocates. They're who you're reaching if you're calling our hotline, which is available 24/7. They accompany folks to court. They accompany folks to district court hearings, to police interviews, to medical exams. So they're the ones that are helping folks through the criminal justice system. Our counseling services are available for anyone who is a victim of crime. You don't have to engage law enforcement in order to be eligible for our counseling services. And so we have 2 full-time and 5 part-time counseling staff, including 2 bilingual bicultural staff. And they provide traditional talk therapy. We also have an art therapist. We have an intern who is a music therapist right now, which is pretty cool. I wondered why she came into the office with a guitar the first time she came in. And that was pretty neat. And then we also have a play therapist who focuses on kids, and she sees primarily kids in the after school and early evening hours. And then we also have our prevention education, our prevention violence educators. They are out in the schools in K through 12 in colleges and universities, and talking to parents and professionals about how to create safe and healthy communities. Things like conflict resolution, although I feel like we need a better name for that one because it just doesn't sound very exciting, but it's really, you know, the art of agreeing to disagree without bringing violence or anger into the situation. And then internet safety, we have programs to prevent child sexual assault, child physical abuse, as well as safe dates and healthy relationships. And again, our prevention educators, we have a team of 5, are going out into the schools all over the county.
That's a very detailed answer, which I appreciate. And at a recent CVC event, we heard your COO, Ashley Shea, explain in even more detail how your colleagues interweave all your offerings. But I'm curious for our listeners here, could you explain how your 3 individual services and all the micro services underneath them really lend support to the local community in a holistic way?
Sure. So the story that Ashley, our amazing COO, shared at the most recent Show the Love event was that our violence prevention educators go into the schools and they are doing K through 12 programming. And they're not just there once. They're there every year. They do multiple grades. And so they become kind of fixtures in the hallways, you know, oh, CVC's coming today. And the kids know what that means. And so they become trusted, valued adults in the children's lives. And so after they do their program, sometimes, unfortunately, a child will disclose that they've been abused, that the program that they heard is I want to say resonating, but I guess for a 5 or 6, 7-year-old, that's probably not the right word, but it meant something to them. And so they'll come to our educator and say, someone, you know, touched me inappropriately. They'll share what we refer to as CVC as a disclosure, which means that the child is revealing that they've been sexually or physically abused. And then we are all mandated reporters here at CVC. And so the first step would be making a report of that child to the child line that we're required to do. But then secondarily, that child, the parent would get connected, the non-offending parent would get connected to CDC, and that child might go through a forensic interview. And so then our advocates would get involved, our victim advocates would get involved, providing support to both the child and the non-offending parents. And then that child, after, you know, things go through and everything occurs, that child might need counseling. And then the child gets connected to our counseling department. And so it is absolutely feasible that our clients kind of are receive services or are somehow connected with every piece of what we do here at CVC.
Thanks. That's a really descriptive way to walk through it. And, you know, clearly that kind of thing does happen.
That was all Ashley.
Yeah, she's amazing. So we've talked before that Chester County, not in this conversation, but in previous episodes, that Chester County is an affluent corner of the world. So many folks may be surprised about the level of sexual violence and gender crimes based in our region. Now, we know CVC doesn't record or compile statistics. That's not your organization's role. But perhaps I wonder if you can talk to us about just how busy your direct services, your advocates are, and your counseling teams are, and maybe we use that as a way to shed some light on the prevalence of such crimes in and around Chester County. Or I guess in Chester County, given that your remate is Chester County, just to clarify.
Yeah, so our reach is Chester County. If you live or were victimized in Chester County, those are the folks that we serve. And I thank you, Liam, for mentioning that we do get asked that question a lot. What are the crime statistics in Chester County? And because our clients don't have to call the police, they don't even have to involve the police. We're not a great repository for crime statistics. It doesn't have to be recent. So it could have happened 10 years ago somewhere else. And now they would like some counseling to help them heal from it. So we're definitely not an accurate current crime statistics. But to your question, which I finally am getting to, we see for our counseling department so we go by fiscal year. Not a fan of fiscal year, but it is what it is. So our fiscal year is from July 1st to June 30th. And in last fiscal year, fiscal 23, we had almost 1,600 counseling sessions, and that was for 143 individuals was how many counseling sessions and how many folks we saw. For our hotline, we took over 2,200 hotline calls. We have a hotline that is available 24/7. During the week, it's answered here in our office. And then on the evenings and weekends, it goes through an answering service and then to our advocates. And so that hotline fielded about 2,200 calls in that same fiscal year. We also provided accompaniments, which meant we went somewhere with someone, whether it be to a medical appointment, to a court hearing, to an interview, anything like that. And we did that also roughly over 2,200 times in fiscal 23. And as an interesting measure, that number doubled from fiscal 21 to fiscal 22. And we thought, well, maybe it was catching up from COVID. Maybe there was a lot of court dates happening that got canceled because of COVID. But that number stayed high in fiscal 23. It actually increased by another couple of hundred in 23. So our team is definitely busier than they have been in the last few years with really, it just seems like the cases are very serious and very time intensive, particularly recently in the office.
I'd like to go back to one of your previous answers where you were talking about all your work in local schools. Your prevention and education colleagues are in classrooms all across the county helping our children learn about self-respect, self-autonomy, and related topics. But for those of us who are well out of 12th grade, what would be, say, one educational lesson or point of focus that you would like us to better understand?
Consent. I'm actually, as you were asking that question, I was like, wow, this sounds like a hard question. And then as you got to the end of it, I was like, oh, okay, it's easy. I know this one. consent. I think that one of the things that we forget about as adults is asking if it's okay. Those that know me best know that I'm a hugger. That's how I say hello. And when I started at CVC, I was constantly asking people, is it okay if I give you a hug? Is it okay if I give you a hug? And people were looking at me like I was crazy because that's always how I said hello. And I was like, well, I was doing it wrong. Like, I should have been asking permission for a really long time. And, you know, similarly, when we post things on Facebook, not everyone is on Facebook. Not everyone wants, you know, things on Facebook. So just really being cognizant of any time there's an opportunity to make sure that somebody is okay with what you are doing, taking that opportunity just to say, can I? And making that a regular part of your day.
That makes sense. And that's a great answer for adults, I think, particularly when consent didn't used to mean quite the way that consent means today. So it's an expanded definition. What different grades do you typically interface with it? Is it truly K through 12, or is it a subset of those grades?
We are in every grade, K through 12, and the programming in the second grade doesn't look like it does in the 12th grade. The messaging is very consistent, but how it's delivered and the interaction that our team has with the kids in the class is different from K through 12. So we are truly in K through 12.
And are you in college level classes at all?
Yes, we are. So we are at colleges and universities. We do a number of different things in the colleges and universities. Typically at the beginning of the school year, we'll meeting with the freshmen. We work with Lincoln University, Westchester University, Immaculata, and the University of Valley Forge. And so, each college gets different programming. Each school gets different programming. We try to be very custom to what the school needs, and how we can support them. So we don't go in and say, this is what you have to have. They typically will reach out and say, this is what we would like to have. We do work with residents, RAs, those that are in charge of the dormitories and things like that. We also, particularly at Westchester, our team goes into the classrooms and we do some classroom presentations as well.
We know that you work closely with all the police departments in Chester County and everything at the township level, at the sheriff department level, and even with the state police. How are you able to build collaborative relationships based on mutual respect, really around the needs of the victim? How does that work for you? How do you do that? That can be a challenge, I expect.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that allows us to have such positive relationships with police departments is that they see the value in what we do. I probably surprisingly watch a lot of Law and Order. I don't know why. You'd think I would not watch Law and Order all the time, but I do. It's one of my guilty pleasures. And there's no victim advocates in Law and Order. Like, I don't know if they're behind the scenes or if they just didn't think about it. But whenever I watch the show, sometimes I think, yeah, see, this is where a victim advocate would be really helpful. And our law enforcement recognizes that everyone has a role in the criminal justice system. And our victim advocates have a very distinct role in the system and can really make sure that the victims are getting what they need, they're not being re-traumatized, and they have someone to turn to throughout the entire process. And I think that all our law enforcement values that, and that's why once they see a case where a victim advocate was involved, they're very inclined to call again, and they're very inclined to make sure that the folks that they are helping and providing services to are also connected to us.
Chris, I'm thinking about all the services you provide to the community, and I'm trying to reconcile that with something we discussed in episode 41. And Chris Sayello of the United Way of Chester County actually brought it up. And he explicitly thanked all the workers inside nonprofit organizations during COVID lockdowns for their significant efforts on the community's behalf. So talk to us about what those early days of COVID were like for your direct services team members.
Scary. I think that's the first, you know, it's the further removed we get. We're close to 4 years out to the day of when, you know, the world shut down in air quotes that no one can see. And so at first we were kind of like, oh, we'll go home for 2 weeks and then this thing will be fine and we'll all come back. And we were thinking that it would be a little bit easier. It was not. Our team is in hospitals, and so right away they were not allowed in hospitals. It was really hard on our direct services team to try to figure out how to provide services because we knew the crimes were still happening. Our hotline stayed open, obviously, and we just adapted. We used iPads and FaceTime to try to provide services in hospitals. And then fortunately, as soon as they started to open up our hospitals and the partnership that we have with them, they recognized that we were a part of the team. And so they allowed us back in, and it was still scary because we knew very little about what was happening and everything at the time. Our prevention educators, the schools closed down, and they thought, okay, we'll work on our summer curriculum. We'll do things that we would normally do in the summer now. And then when they stayed home, they had to figure out another way to provide programming because the schools were closed for obviously a lot longer than we thought. And so they had to switch everything to virtual as well as our counseling team. I think our counseling team, initially, it was difficult, but they had the easiest adjustment because they could pick up the phone and speak to their counseling clients. They got very busy because a lot of folks who had come for services already wanted to come back because of everything that was happening with COVID. And then we found Doxy.me, which is a virtual platform, which frankly, we were like, why weren't we doing this before? We had a client who was in Oxford. And as the restrictions started to ease, they said, well, can I just keep doing it virtually? Because it saves me an awful lot of time from having to drive to Westchester. So there were some positive, we still offer the virtual aspect. There's still programming so that we can be accessible in many different ways. But for the most part, it's back to business. And I wouldn't say as usual, because there has been a lot that's changed since before COVID.
Well, I think that's an impressive answer, because I've said it before, I'll say it again. The worst possible outcome from COVID for us as a society, I think, is that we go back to doing things exactly the way we did them before COVID. So it's wonderful that you were able to at least take all that bad and learn from it and make your experience better for your clients. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
With the context of that answer, I want to direct your attention to a blog post that one of your colleagues, Hannah Oliveras, published, well, you folks published on her behalf on your LinkedIn page. And she's one of your victim advocates. And we'll certainly link to that in our show notes over on startlocal.co. But the blog post was a day in the life of an advocate. Chris, and I wonder if you can kind of walk us through, not necessarily read it word for word, but walk us through, what is a day in the life of an advocate like today now that we're back to, and I'm going to throw up the invisible air quotes, normal. What does that look like for your colleagues and for Hannah?
Yeah, Hannah's article was amazing. She had come to us and had an interest in writing. It's something that she enjoys. And so she was wondering if she could use that talent to help CVC. And so she came up with the idea to write this article. And it's also on our LinkedIn page. And it's a really great article. And when I get that question, Liam, there is no normal day in the life of an advocate. It's very similar to when I was at Legal Aid. In the morning, you could be doing one kind of case. In the afternoon, you could be doing another kind of case. And at night, you might be on call on a completely different kind of case. So for the most part, their days are spent being the liaison between law enforcement, the district attorney's office, and our clients, the victims in the cases, trying to find out if court is happening. Is court continued? Is it happening tomorrow? What time do I need to be there? Do I feel prepared? Going to court with our clients, that's the thing that is very, very time consuming. I used to say when I was at Legal Aid, when you're in trial, and it's the same for our advocates, they are in court all day, every day. Court generally starts around 9:30 and generally ends around 4:30, but sometimes it goes well after 4:30. And the rest of their clients didn't stop. The rest of their caseload didn't stop. They were getting phone calls all day. They weren't responding to emails because they're in court. So being in court like that can be incredibly exhausting, not only during the day with everything that they are listening to and helping others process, but then a few days later when they have to dig out of 3 days of work, when it feels like they were on vacation from the amount of work they have to catch up on, but they were not, they were anything but on vacation being in court. And so that's typically, there's just a lot of moving pieces and a lot of different things that our advocates are doing on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, that advocacy role has got to be hard because they're, if they're in the hospital, if they're at the police station in the early days of post-reporting, if I can put it that way, that's a lot of stress to deal with and a lot of hurt to experience. And then if it revisits again in court or whatever happened, and then to have to finish that up as an advocate to then switch on to something again and again, and that's an amazing job your team is doing. So I sit in awe of the work you folks are doing.
Thank you. I sit in all of the work that they are doing as well, and I feel honored and privileged that I get to talk to you and Eric and to the community and share the work that they're doing, because I totally agree, Liam. I think they have one of the most difficult jobs in the criminal justice system in managing all the interest in everything that they manage and the stress and the trauma that they manage.
Speaking of sharing and difficult jobs, something that I think a lot of folks do when they've had a difficult day in their profession is they come home and they talk about what bad things they experienced, what bad things they saw with their friends or their family. And your organization is a little bit different in that people can't always do that. The confidentiality of your services is something very prominently featured on your website. So I'm wondering, how does confidentiality play out across your work? Or to ask it another way, what does it mean when you say that your services are offered in confidentiality precisely? And what are the limits of that confidentiality?
So as far as I'm concerned, there are no limits. our services are 100% confidential. To get into the weeds a little bit, there is a statute, a sexual assault counselor statute, that we are all sexual assault counselors. We operate under our direct services supervisor, and that statute allows us, it acts as a shield. So if someone says, hey, I want to know this, we can say, nope, there's a statute that says I don't have to tell you. And so we take that confidentiality very seriously, and we extend it to all other services that we provide here at CVC. And I think that one of the ways that our team, because our violence prevention educators and our counselors also have incredibly different jobs, and I am in awe of them every day, as well as our advocates. You know, we have a very close-knit team here at CVC, and we vent to each other. We process with each other. Our direct services supervisor, Rachel Cogill, actually last week, I happened to walk through our boardroom, and she and her team were designing index cards to put on their desks that were, yes, I'm okay to talk. Like, I'm in a good headspace right now. You just had a really rough day in court. Come in and talk to me. Or I'm in a meeting. I can't be, you know, please don't interrupt me. Or I had a bad day too, and I just want to get to 4:30 and get home. And so they had, Rachel had bought all these different art supplies. I think the boardroom table is covered in glitter now, but it'll be well worth it because it was just a really fun activity for them to make sure that they're, you know, creating healthy boundaries amongst themselves, and that's how they process what they deal with every day.
Yeah, I love that emphasis on communication. How do we communicate in a way that enables us to work closely together in trying circumstances? In simple flashcards that you just leave on your desk, not today, not now, give me a sec. Whatever the messaging is great. Congrats to you folks for putting that together.
That was all Rachel's idea.
Well done, Rachel. In advance of our conversation today, Chris, we spoke about how you and your colleagues focus on supporting victims of crimes. And we all know that victims of crimes often have related needs with, for example, housing, employment, transportation, immigration status, maybe mental health and the like. How does CVC partner with other organizations and nonprofits to support victims on the kinds of needs that your organization does not directly address?
The short answer is all day, every day. We absolutely rely on our nonprofit partners here in Chester County to provide help with food insecurity, with financial assistance. We have food boxes from the Chester County Food Bank, the emergency food boxes in our front closet. So if a client comes in and needs assistance with food, we hand them the box. And there's also a list on top of all the other places that the Chester County Food Bank supports here in Chester County so that they can get services. We regularly reach out to our colleagues at Home of the Sparrow, Open Hearth, all kinds of organizations that help with housing, financial assistance, and just try to make sure that our clients are getting everything they need. We do not want to be a one-stop shop. We can't, and we don't have to be because of the amazing organizations. We also recently created a position. Caitlin Brogan is our crime victim resource advocate. We found that our team was getting really burned out from needing to know all there is to know about every nonprofit in Chester County. And so we said, you know what, let's have an advocate who that's her role. And so when our team has a client, or even our any of our team, counseling team, prevention education team, or the direct services team has a client that needs assistance, they can go to Caitlin. And Caitlin can either already know the answer, or she'll do some research and figure out what the best way is to connect the person to services. So, our nonprofit community is incredibly important to our work and connecting with them and staying connected with them.
It seems like you're doing so much good work, but you're so busy at the same time, despite the affluence of the county. So it's really important that we focus on prevention as much as possible. And I know you're involved in that role in the schools. You already mentioned that. And I want to go back to that because this is 2024 when we're recording this episode. 2024 happens to be an election year. And in election years, everything gets a little bit more politicized all the way down to the school board level. And so your prevention education, because you're in each school district in Chester County, each school district is controlled by its own elected school board, and it has its own goals. It has its own focus, set out by those individual boards. So how do you navigate relationships with each of those different school districts to ensure that local area children can benefit from your training materials and prevention truly works?
Yeah, and Liam had mentioned that we've been doing this work for, it's been just over 50 years now. We celebrated our 50th anniversary last year. I'm really glad that we're 51 because that was a long year. And our prevention education program started very, very soon after we were formed in 1973. So we've been doing that work for almost 50 years as well. And I think one of the key things is something I mentioned earlier in the podcast is that the schools trust us. They value us. They know they can have open dialogue. Hey, this program didn't land quite right. Can we make some changes to it? Or this was perfect. Can you please do it again to every other grade we have? It's all about feedback and us feeling valued by the school district and them knowing that we are a trusted resource to reach out to. Our team, Naomi Devine, is our prevention education supervisor, and she does a really great job in just making sure the school districts know we're there. We know there's some school districts we might not be in 1 year. And then the next year we do 16 programs. We can't hit every school in Chester County every year. I would love to, but we just don't have the staff for that. So we try to just listen and, continue to be a valued partner.
Chris, you've talked a lot today about the work your teams are doing, the fact that you're working with various law enforcement agencies in the area. You're working with the courts and the court systems and the attorneys and the judges there. You work with a lot of local nonprofits to provide wraparound service or direct folks to wraparound services. What is a business or organization or nonprofit that more folks in Chester County should know about?
CBC.
So that's the second time in a row that the nonprofit leader said us. I love it. Well, I will say the same thing to you as I said to Rick Roberts of YMWIC. Folks know about you now because you're on the show. How about somebody else, Chris?
Great. And I say that jokingly and not jokingly because
of course.
A lot of people are like, I'm not a victim of crime. I don't need CBC. And so sometimes our messaging can get lost. Serious, kidding, not kidding. When I said that. What is another organization? That's a really hard question to answer because there are so many of them. Two that I really, really value are Home of the Sparrow and Open Hearth out in Phoenixville. Home of the Sparrow is in Exton. We rely really heavily on them for helping our clients that are experiencing poverty and housing issues and things like that. And just communicating with their staff, having a warm handoff, knowing that if we send someone over there, they're going to get the services that they need. So those are, I know you only asked me for one and I gave you three, but.
I liked your answer to Liam's question. So I want to go back to your answer and ask you, what can the local community do to help you and CVC?
Donate money. That kind of goes without saying. But we did talk about our government funding. Our government funding is also very specific. It says what I'm allowed to spend the funding on and what services have to be provided. And so if something happens in the community that's not already on that laundry list, we need the funds to be able to adjust and be able to provide services outside of what our government funding. So that is absolutely one of the things that folks can do. And then talk about us. Make sure that your neighbors know about us. Share our stuff on Facebook so people know about it. And if something were to happen 3 years from now, they could say, wait, my neighbors said something on Facebook. I vaguely remember CDC something, and they can search and find us and get access to our services.
Chris, we've had a lot of folks in past episodes sing the praises of your CVC colleagues. And it's pretty clear from what they're sharing with you, and our guests are impressive in their own right, and you're right up there with them, that you're probably a fantastic boss and you run a good ship. And that's not to make you blush or anything, but it makes me wonder, are you hiring? Can I come work for you? Do you have positions available?
I know you said not to knock because people get annoyed at that sound. So in my head, I'm knocking on my desk because I'm very superstitious. We are fully staffed right now, and hopefully, fingers crossed, that will remain the same for months. If I know years is a little pie in the sky, but at least it'll stay the same for months. So no, we are not hiring right now.
Do you have scope for volunteers to get involved?
We do. So a little longer answer question to this question than you probably anticipated. We originally had hotline volunteers, and they had to go through a 40-hour training, and then they would take hotline shifts. And we had a full-time volunteer coordinator who helped us with that program. And unfortunately, the impetus behind that was to alleviate being on call. Our team, in addition to what they do every day, including our prevention educators, are on call after hours and on the weekends. And so we were hoping that the hotline volunteers would help with the stress of that additional role. And we found it really didn't. And so one of the things that we try to do at CVC is if something isn't working, we try to figure out a different way to do it. So we have on-call advocates now who are actual part-time CVC staff members, and that is working better. So we don't have the hotline, but we do have opportunities, such as, Liam, you're involved on our commissions committee or our communications committee. We also have our mission committee that helps with our events and helps to do things that further our mission in the community. And then we also have lots of outreach, what we refer to as tabling. So going out to different events all over the county and representing CVC at those events. It's really hard on our team when there's something on a Saturday or Sunday or even at night to put in those extra hours. And so it is a huge help when we have volunteers that are willing to go out man those tables for us or staff those tables for us so that we can help get the word out about our services and who we are and what we do.
Your impressive legal career includes serving as an assistant district attorney in Chester County, private practice, and a leadership position with Legal Aid of Southeastern PA, all before you became the chief executive officer of the Crime Victim Center of Chester County. Tell us how your legal career has influenced the manner in which you lead CVC.
I think the biggest thing about how my legal career has influenced how I lead is that being an attorney for me was all about problem solving. It was all about getting the facts and figuring out a way to solve whatever problem was in front of me. And here at CVC, I take a similar approach to, everything, all the challenges that we face is to try to figure out how to get all the facts, get all the voices in the room, and then figure out a way best to provide services, to get funding, whatever the particular challenge before us in the particular hour of the day happens to be. So I think that is the biggest influence. And I'm also kind of a little analytical, like I keep that, but that, as the team jokes, my lawyer brain can kind of kick in and help to analyze things and get a little deeper. So it definitely has affected how I lead CVC.
As we record this conversation, we wanted to take a moment to note that April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. Chris, please tell us how CVC is planning to mark the occasion and how folks get involved with it.
Yeah, Liam, thank you. April is a really important month for us at CVC. As you noted, it's Sexual Assault Awareness Month. We start the month with what we refer to as launches, where in Kennett Square, Westchester, Phoenixville, and Coatesville, teams of staff and our volunteers and our supporters will head into those areas and hang teal ribbons on the lampposts and signposts throughout the main parts of those cities and boroughs. Westchester's is 3 o'clock on April 1st, and that would be at our office in Westchester at 135 West Market. On Tuesday the 2nd, we will be at Kennett Square at the United Way of Southern Chester County. Also on the 2nd at 2 o'clock, we will be in Phoenixville. And then on the 3rd, we will be in Coatesville. Coffee with the Chief for the Coatesville City Police Department is happening at Presence Bank. And then we will be doing the launch immediately after in Coatesville. And we're grateful to partner with some of our funding partners. In Westchester, we're partnering with the Fund for Women and Girls, Kennett Square with the United Way of Southern Chester County, in Phoenixville, the Phoenixville Community Health Foundation, and in Coatesville with the Alliance for Health Equity. And you can find details about that also on our Facebook page as far as the time and specific meeting locations if you're interested in joining us. No need to RSVP or anything. You can just show up on the day of and help us recognize the month. We also have a run that's being organized by a Phoenixville high school student on April 13th. It's a walk a mile in her shoes event where men walk a mile in high heels to understand and signify, you know, recognizing what sexual violence and sexual assault victims go through. And so that will be held at Reeves Park on April 13th from 11 to 2. And shockingly, that is also on our Facebook page if you would like to find information. You can also sign up for that on our website. It is a pay as you can with a suggested donation of $10 for folks to participate.
Christine Zaccarelli, Chief Executive Officer of Crime Victim Center of Chester County, we're grateful for your time and the insight you shared with us. Before we wrap up this conversation, please tell us how folks can find you online and learn more about CVC.
Yes, thank you. We have a website, www.cvcofcc.org, all the first initials of our name with of in the middle. We are also on Facebook. We're also on Instagram, and we are also on LinkedIn. So you can connect with us in any of those formats that are all getting better, thanks to Liam and his help on the communications committee. But yeah, that's how you can find us. You can also sign up for our newsletter, our quarterly newsletter that's going out, and you can do that on our website as well.
Chris, thanks so much for your time today. Really appreciate chatting with you.
Thank you. And I did want to give one more shout out to Stephanie Rylett. She is our counseling supervisor. I gave shout outs to all of our supervisors, and I did not want to forget her.
Plenty of time.
Well, thank you to my co-host, Liam Dempsey. I'm Eric Goodmanson. The Start Local podcast is published every 2 weeks, or fortnight, as Liam likes to say. We invite you to subscribe to Start Local using your favorite podcast app. You can also visit the Start Local website at startlocal.co for show notes, including links mentioned on this show and summaries of past episodes. We hope you join us for the next episode. Thank you for listening.